Hello, and welcome to Reflections, a podcast miniseries featuring conversations with each of the artists in the exhibition Reflecting on Ruth Asawa in the Garden of Remembrance, on view at the San Francisco State University Fine Arts Gallery from February 24th to April 6th, 2024. My name is Weston Teruya. I'm an artist and writer, and I'll be your host over the next few weeks as we highlight the work of each of the exhibiting artists, Mark Bao Sasaki, Tina Kashibagi, Paul Kitagaki Jr., Lisa Solomon, and Titi Takemoto. Each episode will feature a short conversation with one of the exhibiting artists, giving us a peek into the creative process and research behind their projects in their own words. This episode, we're talking with Paul Kitagaki Jr. Let's jump in and hear Paul's reflections on his work.
I'm Paul Kitagaki Jr. I'm a photojournalist. I've been practicing for 46 years, and I grew up in the Bay Area, and I was lucky enough to share a Pulitzer Prize in 1990 while working at the San Jose Mercury News covering the earthquake in the Bay Area. I've been working on this project. It's called Gambate, Legacy of an Enduring Spirit. Since 2005, I've been searching for the identities of the Japanese-American incarcerees taken that were photographed in the War Relocation Authority photographs in 1942 through 45 and 6. So I wanted to know about their identity, who they were, what happened, because my family, I'm a Sansei Japanese-American, they never spoke about this, that they were incarcerated, and I learned about it in a U.S. history class when I was in 10th grade. And when I heard about it, I was like really outraged back then. This is 1970, and I really wanted to know more. So I researched at the time. There's only one book that was out called Americans Concentration Camp, and that was the only book that I saw that I could find back at the time talking about their experience. But basically, it's very factual. And as I started my career as a photographer, my uncle, Nobu Kitagaki, was an artist in San Francisco. He told me that our family had been photographed by Dorothea Lange, who was a famous documentary photographer, one of my heroes. And I was like, wow, I couldn't believe it. So in 1984, I was covering Gary Hart running for the president, and I was on the campaign trail, and I ended up in D.C. So I went to the National Archives, and I wanted to know what this photograph looked like that my uncle had talked about like 6 years earlier. And so I went to the archives. They pulled out these 4x5 pictures of Dorothea Lange's collection, and there's like over 900 of them. I'm flipping through these little boxes, looking for my family, and all these faces were staring up at me. Some of the photos were like the iconic photos I found in another book that was in 1972 called Executive Order 9066. And for me, that was like the most iconic images of the incarceration experience for the Japanese Americans in the United States. Those images is like were reaching out to me, wanting me to tell their story. Because there have been no really personal stories from those from those photographs. If you went to the National Archives, the back of the photographs, a lot of them had a date, a place, but no name who was in the photograph. So they're anonymous, right? So I really wanted to know the backstory. It's maybe something that would fill in my personal history and of the Japanese-American experience of the current incarceration, how that affected their lives in the generations past or into the future. I was in the National Archives flipping through these boxes, and I found this picture of my grandparents and my dad and my aunt. And there's this white person, Hagujin, as we say in Japanese, smiling, and my grandparents are smiling up, and I'm like, why are they smiling? This is like the worst day in their life. And years later, my uncle Nobu told me, oh, that was her family friend, Dorothea Hightower, and she was wishing them goodbye. And that family had stored some of their personal belongings. This is in Oakland. And then they stored the rest of their personal belongings at the Oakland Buddhist Temple. And then there's also two more photographs. Well, actually three more photographs. Two of my aunt standing there that's been used in a lot of book covers and different things. My aunt Kimiko Kitagaki. And then there's another picture of my uncle Nobu, who actually helped start the library at Tanfran. And you can see the library in Tanfran, and you can see him in the background. Also, my uncle Nob helped start the Trek magazine in Topaz. He was great friends and room with Minio Kubo and her brother when they were in Tanfran and Topaz. I really felt it was important to document all these subjects in these pictures before they're gone, but it was a really big challenge, like I said earlier. There's no names on the back of the photographs. So what I did was I went to put a poster board up of some of my more famous 15 photographs, took it to like one of the, you know, the summer Buddhist temple. Everybody comes for food and games. And my business card there said, are you in any of these photographs? You know who's in there? And so I'm like, this is going to be great because there's some Sacramento people in there. I'm like, this is awesome. Not one call. I was like, oh, man. So I talked to somebody else here in Sacramento, and they suggested I go to the, there's a Methodist Japanese American church here, and they do a Japanese lunch for all the seniors. So I took that board there, and I got my first hit of somebody recognizing somebody in that photograph. So it's been a long journey like that. It's like a lot of detective work. And at the time, the internet was in its infancy, so you couldn't like just Google something or, you know, to find somebody. So I had to take my pictures, those pictures ran to a lot of places, say, hey, do you know who's in this photograph? And that's how I got started. It took me 7 years to get my first 12 subjects, if you can believe that. For me, the most important thing was to give all the subjects who are in these photographs a voice. Because back in 1942, they had no voice, nobody there to help protect them. And I wanted them to give their personal stories on how an executive order changed their lives forever. The interesting thing is when I find somebody, I'd have to find their phone number, and I'd have to call them up. And you know, Japanese American culture, it's like the you're not the nail that sticks up. It's Enjo, you know, you kind of don't give a lot of attention to yourself. So calling them up is like, well, hey, this is Paul Kitagaki. I'm a photographer. I didn't want the phone slam down. Like, you're a salesman, right? It's like, well, you know, you're in this historical photo. Oh, really? I didn't know. And then it's like, well, I'd like to photograph you now and maybe interview you. And you're like, no. They're like, no. And I'm trying to explain how important this is because they're the only one who could tell this story. I can't tell it. They could tell it, and I think their own personal words are so much more powerful than somebody, like a second person telling their story. So eventually it got into a lot of doors. People trusted me with their story to let me in there. The photographs taken in 1942 were shot with a big format camera, 4x5 on black and white film. I wanted my current photographs to have the same feeling. So I shot everything on 4x5 with a 4x5-inch camera, not digital, with shooting black and white film. So when you see the two images together, the historical picture and my picture, you see this marriage of time passing. And we'd also have a story on who's in these photographs. You're not just a number, because remember, everybody was assigned a number and a tag. So that's the only identity everybody had. Now we have who was in the photograph, their name, their family history, what happened with them. And I think that's so much more important for the future generations. And so many of my subjects had said, we don't want this to happen to another ethnic group or another generation. That's why they're coming out, speaking out, telling their story. And I think that was so important. Because after 9/11, I think a lot more of that generation came out and spoke out, not wanting this to happen to another ethnic group. So I thought that was really important.
Have you been able to reshape and add to the existing narrative in places like the National Archive with all this research that you've done?
The National Archives hasn't reached out to me about the names and stuff on some of the photographs they have in their archives. I did have a couple pictures in the Smithsonian a few years back when they have a Japanese incarceration exhibit there. So I have this book that came out, Beyond Barbed Wire. It's in the second edition. And basically, it mirrors my traveling photo exhibit. So I'm trying to get it to a wider audience because a lot of people in the United States really don't know this part of history.
Can you talk a little bit more about the trust-building process you've had to undertake? You mentioned that it took some time to have a breakthrough. What were those conversations like?
After I was able to talk to them on the phone for a while and say, this is important, you're in this photograph, I'd really like to know your story. Once I get there, we build a trust, and basically, I felt so honored to have them trust me with telling their story, their personal story, their family story, because that's something Japanese culture doesn't do. They don't really let their emotions show. And for a few of my subjects, I mean, when we were doing the interview, it really brought up some memories that they had long suppressed, and they got very emotional. telling their stories, but I think they were really, happy is not the right word, but I think it was a good thing for them to be able to share their stories so somebody else would know. And so, you know, because being emotional, I think that grabs more people that are outside of your culture. I mean, that's like a universal cultural thing for all different ethnic groups. It doesn't matter. Emotions bridge the gap between all different people, right? Get that emotion and you hear that story, it transcends everybody and they can relate to you.
Were there particular stories that really stand out to you or feel especially impactful that way?
I photographed Lillian Matsumoto. Grew up in Salt Lake City. I think her dad or uncle ran a newspaper there in Salt Lake City, of all places. And then she came to Berkeley, got her undergraduate degree there at UC Berkeley. And then she wanted to get into grad school. She wanted to be a social worker. This is in the late 30s. And when she tried to do that, they said, no, we're not going to let you in the program. And she said, no, this is very important for the Japanese American community. We need this kind of, you know, worker for our, you know, helping our community. So she was eventually able to get her master's degree in social work. And then she went to work. There was an orphanage kind of place in LA. So she went there. And then when Executive Order 906 was signed, her and her husband said, what's going to happen with all the orphans? Where are they going to go? Who's going to take care of them? So they petitioned the government to have the children's village built in Manzanar. So they gathered all the kids from San Francisco, LA, and there were some mixed marriage kids too. They had all those laws against mixed marriages, but they, I mean, you know, things happen. So they had over 100 something kids at the very first in Manzanar. And what she said was when they were taking the bus from LA up to Manzanar, they had a soldier with his rifle in the bus guarding these kids, these little kids. And she said this one girl stood up and started singing God Bless America in the bus when they're about to leave. And the soldiers became teary-eyed. And that just stuck with her. And then her and her husband started the orphanage in Manzanar, children's camp. And they also adopted one of the children from there.
Can you also talk about the new piece that you created for this exhibition?
So for this new exhibit at San Francisco State, I'm showing some of my work I've been working on with the pairs of 1942 photographs from the War Relocation Authority and my new contemporary photograph of the subject and their story. And also, my grandfather had made some furniture out of the scrap lumber, so he made a couple chairs. So I'm exhibiting one of the chairs that my grandfather had made. Also, last year I went to Topaz for the first time. So I took my grandfather's chair, and I found the exact location where they lived in Topaz, the block and the apartment number. And I put that chair there, and I wanted to photograph that chair in that spot. I sat in that chair in the middle of that desert there, and it was just so quiet out there. You could hear a few birds going, but it's just a desolate bottom of the lake bed. I photographed the chair during the middle of the night with the Milky Way in there. And then I photographed it during the day. But I just wanted to have that chair sit there and come full circle with, you know, that chair was built there from the scrap lumber. My grandfather, my parents, they took it back to Oakland. And then it, you know, came to my dad's. And then I got it. And I wanted to bring it back there. And then also, you know, the camp is pretty as it was. I mean, all the timber and all that stuff's gone. But it's pretty incredible being out there. It's still pretty much how it was, the land and everything. And nothing's been rebuilt up, like the buildings. There's no buildings there. There's just some foundations and stuff like that. But it was pretty incredible being out in that spot. So I remember looking at one of the photographs. You'd see the rain, and you'd see these planks on the dirt. I'm like, wow. So I'm out there. I had hot day, had rain. So when it rained, we were walking out there, and that mud would just stick to the bottom of your shoe, be like, you know, inches thick on the bottom of your shoe. So I think, oh, that's why they put all the planks down. And and one of my other subjects that I photographed, she was in Manzanar, but she would say that the dust was so terrible, it'd blow all the time. So she'd have to wash her hair all the time, you know, because it could get that dust and dirt out to stay clean. And I kind of remember the stories of the cracks in the apartments where the dust would come up through the floor, through the walls, and they have to try to cover the walls, the cracks in the walls.
I was struck by this juxtaposition you've set up with the very human-centered portrait pairs that you've done, and then the site photos that you've paired with the chair installation, which is striking in the absence of people.
It's traces of people. It's traces of the Japanese-American community who had been out in this camp. There's a dead tree there, but the Japanese-American planted those trees. There's rock gardens. They hauled all these rocks down to beautify the area, to make rock gardens. And I just wanted to have that essence of them being there and how they shape the landscape too, and how they try to make the landscape bearable for their time in prison there in this desolate, hot, dusty, terrible location with armed guards, with guns pointing in, not out.
One of the recurring things you've brought up is the need to create this space of awareness and empathy to convey what this experience was like. What do you hope audiences take from the experience of your work?
You know, a lot of the subjects I've photographed, it's really hard to find somebody who's still alive today. A lot of my subjects have already passed away. I think we're so lucky that we have their history recorded. And with everything going on today, with Asian hate, or just hate in general, I would hope that some of these stories of their perseverance and their humanity, and like so many of them said, they hope this doesn't happen to anybody else. So I'm hoping their stories as they go out, you know, that would happen. I don't know how they persevered, but they are so strong to, I think they have that Gambate spirit, you know?
Thank you for joining us this week. Please tune in each episode as we feature each of the exhibiting artists in Reflecting on Butasawa in the Garden of Remembrance. Please visit the Fine Arts Gallery to see Paul's installation and the work of all of the artists. The exhibition will be up from February 24th to April 6th. Gallery hours are Tuesday through Friday, 12 noon to 4 p.m., with special hours on Saturdays during public programs. Thank you to Matthew Love for composing and performing the music you're hearing, especially for this series. Special thanks to Sharon Bliss and Kevin Chen, co-curators of the exhibition. The exhibition is supported by the National Endowment for the Arts, the Henry and Tomoe Takahashi Charitable Foundation, the Andy Warhol Foundation for the Visual Arts, and San Francisco State University's Instructionally Related Student Activities Fund.